When did the stair handrail become your new best friend? It's time to call Joint Relief Institute. Fast, safe, FDA approved, covered by Medicare, 708-888-0000.
Your social calendar is filling up quick right now. Summer's coming, and I'm here to remind you to schedule a visit to the northwest side of Chicago, to the best butcher shop in Chicago, Joseph's Finest Meats. Why? I grew up in a butcher shop. I know the difference between quality and not quality. And I'm telling you, I would not be advertising or supporting them if I didn't know their product. Whether it's Italian sausage, USDA prime aged beef, or delicious chops, get them thick and brine them. These guys are a must for summer cooking. If you don't have the time, you're frantic, and people are coming over, I'm not ready, go there and get what you need. They have frozen stock, they have frozen items, homemade, frozen, the kind of thing that you would serve at your home to your family and friends. When you're at Joseph's Finest Meats, Sal and Ben will treat you like family. I guarantee that, personally guarantee, because it is a family business. It's a family butcher shop. There are a few of them left. These are the last of the breed. So do yourself and anyone on your social calendar a favor and make time to visit Joseph's Finest Meats on Addison and Nordica on the far northwest side of the city. A family tradition since 1977, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. Prime aged beef, sausages, homemade, and only the finest meats and cheese. And don't forget the provolone. I'm going to call and check and see if you got it. Joseph's Finest Meats, the proud sponsors of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. Cheers. So when I met these two gentlemen, first time together, we're in a production meeting. Radio production meeting at WLS Radio. Drew Hayes was the boss. Jeff Carlin was brought in to be the producer, and I was going on the air, and I was scared to death. I was nervous. And now we're on the edge of greatness again. And where are you with
me? I'm in LA. I'm in a beautiful, sunny, soon to be 92 degrees today, LA.
It's a rhetorical device. Where are you? To the people listening to this, as the landscape of talk radio gets smaller and smaller, as the woke ratio of political correctness gets tighter and tighter, you're on the Chicago Way podcast with Drew Hayes and Jeff Carlin and John Cass on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and Drew Hayes, our old boss on WLS, who's now in charge of his own website, LA. What is it? Drew, help me out here.
On LACA.com, soon to be a multimedia platform for news for the people who are not being served, the unwoke in California.
Well, I'm on the woke, and I'm not being served here. I got Dan Proft in the morning, that's it. So, Drew, how would you improve Chicago talk radio?
I'd bring Don Wade back from the dead.
From the dead, yeah.
I'd bring Jake Hartford and John Cass back.
God, please.
I mean, I have to say, I believe that if Don Wade were still alive, that the city of Chicago wouldn't be in the problems that it is, that it's clear. I would, you know, talk radio is still well alive. You've got your podcast. This is talk radio. Yeah. People are listening to it on their phone, which is exactly the same size as the transistor radio you used to put under your pillow.
Right.
And they just don't look at it as radio anymore. And in part because radio is an ass. And they allowed satellite radio to come in and rename radio terrestrial radio, like ET. And instead of radio going, no, we're radio and you're some other kind of radio, radio just went, thank you, sir, may I have another? And allowed itself and embraced being called terrestrial radio. It's a very bad marketing decision very early on. But it should still be pointed out that 300 million people a week listen to radio, in spite of the fact that it's very kind of au courant to go, ooh, radio sucks. Radio doesn't suck. Some of the stations you like to listen to are not as good as they were. But, you know, what would you do to change it?
Yeah.
You would have to make it louder. And you would have to make it more present, and it can't really get better until radio itself goes, hey, we're somebody. And that's, I think, that would be the start. But I stand by back when Don Wade was on the station, it was a whole different world. And of
God,
course,
it was good.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. And he's in the Radio Hall of Fame. He was put in the Radio Hall of Fame last October.
Yeah.
And,
so.
You know, that's a pretty good thing.
I think, Drew, I think, and building on that a little bit, I think one of the things that, too, especially kind of accelerated that decline in perception, because obviously perception is reality of radio, we're still hitting the same numbers of people and all that, is the idea of moving, giving away the distribution of it to move it to like this push to, oh, you've got to put yourself out on social media or on Facebook on this and trying to reach people. And they lost that ability to control where, how we're delivering it. I mean, it should be so easy right now to get anybody on or, and it kind of is in a podcast form, but to put that into power, like that, it's the personalities, it's the Don Wades, and there are so many personalities, and you can broadcast from anywhere, you can record from anywhere, and that was, I feel like people are missing kind of that there's not a lot.
Well,
of that.
I definitely think that you're right about that, but the truth of it is, it doesn't matter where it comes from, and I actually kind of pioneered out here podcast to broadcast. Went the other way. Dan Bongino will tell you this, that I was the first to put his podcast on the radio on KABC. And we had it edited down to so it would fit into an hour. And we put that on. That was what launched his radio syndication, whatever it was, 7 years ago or so. And so I think all people care about is getting something good. I'll give you an idea that it would be helpful for AM radio to begin with. And that is that if they and if I ever had enough time to actually start this campaign, I would, that they should eliminate the restrictions on language for AM radio stations. AM radio stations, everyone goes, oh, no one under 80 listens to AM radio.
They do.
Let's allow people to say the four-letter words that would get you a $300,000 fine. Let's let them talk about sex or whatever and let the marketplace decide. I think if they were ever to do that, it would put AM radio on an equal playing field with podcasts and cable TV, all the things you're competing for the listener's ear.
You're going to make Stacey Adams, the queen of porn, a big star in radio if you keep going.
How bad would that be? Let the marketplace decide. I actually tried, you might remember the name Heidi Fleiss. She was the...
DC Madam.
Yeah, Madam, out here. The biggest top line... About 15, 20 years ago, I actually interviewed her thinking about putting her on late night on the weekends. And I remember the conversation was so dirty that I thought, I'm not going to try this. It won't work. But I mean, it won't. We'll get fined. It'll be that we'll get clobbered. But why couldn't you have a conversation boldly, graphically about sex? Why does that have to be stopped when you can get it a million other places?
Right.
Well, and if radio just wised up, it would help.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com.
There's a new sheriff in town.
This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
But as he settles in, can you deal with the hysteria, the meltdowns, the constant whining?
I don't know what to do.
You know what you need? You need a good cup of common sense.
It's just common sense.
Like the kind of common sense you get when you subscribe to johncassnews.com. I'm John Cass, 40 years a journalist in Chicago.
The Chicago way.
I opened this website, John Cass News, so that you could have a decent cup of common sense.
This great country of ours was built on its entrepreneurial spirit.
It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Subscribe today to get access to great columns from John Cass, Dan Proft, and others. Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
Did you put Dr.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Ruth on WLS, because I remember listening to that.
I believe it was when I was there, but that was safe. That right. wasn't, I mean, it was bold for the time, but it was very safe. It was very clinical. It was by a 200-year-old woman.
with a Israeli accent or a Yiddish accent. Yeah.
Right. You know, if they could ever figure out how to put subtitles on your radio, it would have been much better. But but I really think that the fight now is what you guys said at the beginning, and that's really for diversity of opinion.
Yeah.
And we on the right have found homes in talk radio, but we keep getting marginalized. And stations, some of them are still very successful. Some of them have great ratings. Many of them do not and are on the, are on the a donkey on the edge for going right. away. But we now have podcasts and cable and streaming, and there's a million ways to get your voice out, and it's up to you to figure out how to get your voice out.
Yeah. I love the idea of the my personal opinion on their personal feeling for the idea of raunchy radio or just kind of removing those restrictions. I loved when guys like Don would tell a graphic story through innuendo, through close enoughism, and let you pick up, build it on your own mind. Because it took talent, it took the ability to write, it took the ability to spin the language to make it within the guideline rails. But I think you're right. I mean, I think those days are long gone.
But I'm the way I think it would play out is, wouldn't it be okay if Don Wade could go, I hope I can say this on your podcast.
Yep.
That's bullshit. It yeah. would be great if he could say that. He would never abuse that privilege.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it would be more what everyone is dying to get in this day and age is authenticity. It would be authentic and it would be real. And it would put AM radio in a much better competitive position than they are today.
We kind of put the cart before the horse, and that's true. For those who aren't familiar with you, give us your story. Yeah. I mean, where'd you start? I mean, I'd love to have people know the whole Drew Hayes.
It's a good 30 seconds worth. My dad was in the business. He was a singer with Arthur Godfrey, and he did a number of game shows and talk show host in New York. And I got to sit around and occasionally screen phone calls. And it's the only thing that I ever actually, it's the only skill I have. I'm not a good soccer player, although I did play a little soccer. But it's good. And, I didn't have the family business to go into, except that my dad gave me an exposure to this. I went to the University of Miami, and I got a job when I was a sophomore or a junior on a real live radio station doing talk radio overnight on the weekends, where I have to say I was lucky. Things happened on my watch. I actually had an interview with, and you'll remember this, with Phil Crane when he was running when he was running for president. You remember the night Ronald Reagan at the one of the debates had to scold George Bush saying, "I paid for this microphone."
Right.
I had Phil Crane on my overnight show. It was pre-scheduled that night when I was on the air in Miami. I was there when the Iranian students, I'm doing air quotes, took over our embassy in Tehran. And I think back on these things, and I wish I would have saved the yellow teletype paper because it's like it happened. And by the way, I was like 20 years old, and all of a sudden I had to learn not only what Iran was all about, but where it even was, because all of a sudden now I'm talking about it. Anyway, I followed talk radio into a number of different places. I lived in Tampa, and I lived in Miami, and got my first job, my first real job in Miami. And so it's been a great business that paid the bills. The best job I ever had was working at WLS. I take it back. I want to say the best job I ever had was when I was a waiter at the age of 16 at Jimmy Skylark Restaurant. John, you'll appreciate this. Jimmy Ziotis, and
how you doing?
He was, to me, the original Jimmy the Greek, where everything I needed to know about business, I learned from Jimmy. He
how
was unbelievable. And anyway, but LS was great, and I was there twice. I left there and went to ESPN and ran the ESPN radio network. I actually worked there when Keith Olbermann was prickly, but not a, shorten that word. he was actually just kind of, a prima donna. But anyway, so ESPN was great.
Did you know that he was a commie at that time?
He wasn't a commie at that time. Trust me, he wasn't.
Tendencies coming out? No,
absolutely not. And although he did have the biting, he was great at the biting opinion, and he honed that and brought it into politics, and now he's a complete dumbass. Good luck. And I always wanted to live in LA. As a kid, I watched Adam 12 and Dragnet, and I'm like, man, they surf and there's great food, and wow, look at it. It's so beautiful. Palm trees.
And the girls are gorgeous.
They are. And it's sunny in 72 every day. And so I came out here and ran KABC, and it didn't really work out well the first time. And I came back and I ended up back at LS. And I ended up at WBBM, where I ran that newsroom for about 11 years. I also want to point something out, because this might take us in another direction. But when I went to, especially because you have so many Chicago listeners, when I went to BBM, I was worried that they were going to go, how can the guy who had Rush Limbaugh on his radio station run our newsroom? How can that be? And instead, that newsroom said, wow, that guy built a radio station along with Tom Tredd at WLS from nowhere to somewhere. Man, maybe that will work here. And it was great. And two of the very most liberal people in the newsroom turned out to be my two best confidants, because that was in the day and age when all journalists wanted was a good story, a good idea. And so that was a a great run, and I enjoyed, you know, all of it. And then I went back to WLS, and then the guys who owned WLS at the time had me actually for almost 2 years. I programmed LS and WMAL in Washington, D.C. I spent 2 days a week in D.C.
Wow.
And then ultimately I asked if I could come back out here to L.A. And the rest is, as they say, history. And then they, you know, then they finally, I actually was part and parcel of my own demise because I set it up so that somebody could take over running L.A. from San Francisco. But it's all good. And now I'm. Now I am giving counsel to candidates, elected officials. I'm very proud that I do a lot of work with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association.
Uh-huh.
They are absolutely the greatest tax fighters in the world. And so it's, you know, it's been great. And then on LACA is my, you know, is my newest project, and we're going to turn that into something.
You're going to put video on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, my partner is a guy named Jeff Vaughn, who was an anchor at the CBS news stations here until it seems to me he turned 50 and white and still had a penis, and that meant he was no longer needed. So we're going to, and, you know, we're not going to, what you know this about journalism. When you tell the truth, that's journalism.
Yeah.
What's being deployed here is not. It's advocacy. And we're going to call stuff out. Yesterday, I posted a story with an AI generated picture of Karen Bass covering her eyes because the mayor just got a report. And I did the headline, you know, of course you knew, confirmed, they were lying about the homeless numbers. And yeah, that's the truth, as the homeless numbers continue to climb here. So, we will blaze a trail. And there's a real lot of readers, listeners, viewers in Southern California who have no place to go. Donald Trump got more votes in California than any other state. He got more votes in L.A. County than any other county. It's just not enough because there's too many wokes.
Right.
But yeah, it's what they like to call niche, except it's a huge niche, and they deserve something better.
That's the thing that people always ask me, because I've been in radio and media and right, not so much now, but in around 2016 and later, because I live in a very liberal area, they're like, how could anybody have ever voted for Donald Trump? I don't understand, blah, blah, blah. And that's always my retort to them, is that because you were overlooking people who didn't have anywhere to go, didn't have anybody who spoke to them, and that he did. And you know, I don't know how you can't wrap your head around that. But what, you know, Chicago, is John and I talk about it all the time. There is no real conservative voice in media here. I mean, other than like us and, you know, Dan Proft and maybe a handful of other people who get noticed or even are talked about. But how do you feel LA compares to that? I mean, it sounds like it's just a complete wasteland of liberalism. But is there anything? I mean, is there anyone out there who's doing what you're doing or already has been doing what you're doing?
Well, to some degree, the New York Post just opened up an outpost here called the California Post, and they are having an exceptionally strong run, and they are absolutely changing the landscape. They do some video. They don't really do any radio. We actually, on LACA, we actually have a deal with KABC Radio where we provide news on their top show, the John Phillips Show. But yes, there's a guy named John Phillips on KABC. There's a guy named John Cobalt. And I believe John Cass has been on both of those shows.
Yeah.
And they're very, 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 very strong. And you almost have to go. It doesn't matter what the rest of the media says. We talk to our people, and there's a lot of them. And as long as the cash register rings to be able to keep these businesses in business, it doesn't matter. And at some point, and I think Steve Hilton, who's launched an exceptional campaign for governor, I think he changes the landscape. He's like doing the carpet bombs. I think the numbers are too tough, and it'll be tough for him to win. However, he's changed the landscape because he demands to be noticed. And the more that Gavin Newsom, you know, does his little kind of girly dances and lies and ignores.
You don't like those girly dances? Come on.
Oh, my God. They're the best.
They're so exciting.
Oh, my God. The best. And as long as Karen, we have a battle for mayor here between cancer and heart disease. Pick one. I'm holding up, we're not doing video, but I'm holding up my Spencer Pratt hat. Do I think that the election was rigged? The election has been rigged for 15 years here because the Democrats little by little changed the rules. Mm-hmm. And the rules are rigged. But they are the mayor and the socialist city councilwoman running against her are so now. It's not just that they're woke; it's that they are dumb. They are, as I read some writer referred to them, room temperature IQ. And at the end of the day, it's going to be the apocalypse here. And all the bad things, I lived here I was here on Memorial Day when the George Floyd riots happened here in L.A. I lived four blocks from Ground Zero, from where the first cop car was burned.
I think I talked to you that day.
Yep, absolutely. And we did talk. And having that experience, it still isn't. It isn't back, and it mm-hmm. feels like it never will be. And the homelessness is horrible. I live in what is a nice area between two iconic shopping venues, the Beverly Center and the Grove. We walk to both of them. That's how close we are. But it is now you step over homeless people. And you worry about crime. My buddy lives right behind us, sent me a video two nights ago, one block away. Here comes a burglary crew. There's eight different angles of the cameras shooting the three guys coming out like they're Santa Claus with satchels of their stuff, of our neighbor's stuff. And they won't stop it. And not that they can't stop it, they won't. You guys, obviously, especially John, you spent a career, dealing with law enforcement and the cops, and you know so many, and you know so well what they do in Chicago. Here, we have 7,500 cops. It's always undermanned. We need about 10,000, at least 9, and they can't and won't pay to bring them on. So consequently, cars don't get stopped. No, you don't. If I had a homeless guy banging on my gate at 4:30 in the morning about a month ago. I have the Ring video of it. And I called, and it took 25 minutes at 4:30 in the morning for a cop to come here. Not because there aren't enough, there aren't, but because they just don't prioritize a homeless guy banging on someone's gate. That's where we've gone here, and it needs to be fixed.
Where you've gone is the Democratic Party nationally, particularly in Los Angeles and Chicago. And all other big blue cities has deprioritized putting thugs and offenders, violent offenders, in jail. Tony Preckwinkle, I know you miss her. Tony Preckwinkle gets social credit for keeping black men out of jail, and unfortunately. And I wish this wasn't true, but unfortunately, Black men are involved in the majority of violent crimes because I think they have no way out. They have no education. They have no training. And what is the teachers' unions reserved for them? A life of crime and violence and despair. Thanks, teachers.
It is so clear that the fealty that's paid to the unions here, I think in Illinois too, Democrats have a supermajority, means that the SEIU and the teachers' union are 100% in charge. Whatever they want, they get. And somebody's going to need to write a check eventually. The state could go belly up. The city is close to literally going bankrupt because whatever the teachers want, the teachers got 14% increase over 2 years in the last go round. The kids couldn't read the sentence saying they got a 14% increase.
They don't know what 14% means.
They can't count. Right. There is no justification whatsoever except for one thing. It's woke. They want to take the gas cars off the street and make you use an electric car, except that they won't let you. Now the cities don't want to build the places to house the batteries. And we have enough chargers in the state for about 2% of the cars we have. It's an insane. It's all a symptom, I believe, of TDS. Once you have Trump derangement syndrome, then the woke mind virus is an absolute symptom. Where you go, well, we're going to save the snail darter and save the world from air pollution. So we're just going to do away with the cars and the gas stoves. You go, what? Yes. You know, this is where we are.
Well, I'll say as a card-carrying member, because I'm being a teacher and you have to be. Essentially, here's the thing, you do, because in Illinois you need to have professional liability insurance to be a teacher, and there are no companies to offer that other than unions, and so it's a fixed system. So you have to be a part of a larger group. I'm part of a national group. I'm not part of the local group. I mean, technically it funds into them at some point, but I'm required by law to have liability insurance, and nobody offers it. I went to two dozen insurance companies and agents, and none of them would offer anything other than they said, no, you got to go to a union, one of the union shops, to get it from them. And
wow.
It's crazy. But I will say that in my small time working, you know, it's only been the last about a year or so, I've been working with people who are within CPS and the CTU. You would be amazed at the number of people who are not that. They're not a card-carrying socialist economist. They're intelligent people who completely disagree with what the CTU is doing, but they have no voice because the CTU works so hard to crush them.
100%. No, I would not be surprised. Most teachers are great. They really are the ideal of what you'd expect. The problem is the union hierarchy and the politicians, those are the ones who mandate all the rules and regulations, accrue the costs, and build the books and what the kids are learning in school. It's crazy. If we have time, I'll tell you a quick story. When I was in high school, I was in high school in Nyack, New York, Rockland County. It's the forgotten county in New York, a suburb of New York City. And I was the student government president, and the teachers went on strike. The teachers in the Nyack public schools were like the highest paid, certainly in our region of New York. And one of the teachers union people comes up to me and goes, you know, it would really help our cause if the student government would get behind us. And I go, yeah, well, but we think you should go back to work. We think you're paid enough, and you know, It's an affluent school district, and you need to go back to work. And every day you're not, and every day you're on the picket line, and every day you're screaming at the one or two teachers that cross the picket line, it doesn't reflect well on you. So you should hope that the student government doesn't support you. And they walked away, and that was that. And we never did. And the strike, you know, the strike eventually ended. But I learned early on about the power of the and the influence of the teachers union. And, you know, so between Jimmy Ziotis and the teachers union in NIAC, pretty much that's my whole education right there.
That's brilliant.
Well, you got a good education because you talk to people, and that's part of it. You know, that's it's not like what it is now where you go to an Ivy League school right off $200,000 to study what? To study Black Lives Matter or what? What is it that they study? I don't know.
Intersectional crossroads. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it all of it. You know, I mean, the first time we lived here, lived in L.A., we were putting our son in a preschool, and we're looking at putting him in, you know, in whatever we used to call it, grammar school and elementary school. And we went to one of the very famous, I'll even name it, Crossroads, one of the very famous LA celebrity schools. And we went for the parent orientation before we put him in. And they told us that when the girls study math, the boys go out to gym. And because they don't want to have the boys who are better at math, you know, make it harder for the girls. And as they unfold this thing, I raise my hand and I go, can I ask you this? Yes. When the boys study social studies, do you send the girls out to gym? And they're like, well, why would we do that? I go, because the girls are better at social studies than the boys are. And don't you feel that you apply your philosophy uniformly? And of course they don't. This is 20 years ago.
Right.
Well, some of those girls grew up and became movie critics, and they're telling us that The Odyssey is a great movie. I can't believe it. I can't.
You know, I don't want to see that because I was made to read The Odyssey in high school. And I, like everyone I know, read the Cliff's Notes version. And I have idea what that story's about.
Not me.
Oh, not me. I mean, either. But I see, John, I differ from you. I can, because I try to consider myself to see everything, you know, see both sides and just drill down the middle.
Right.
I wanted to see it for the visual spectacularness of what the story was about. But that's I get what you're saying, because I hate that stuff, too. But true. One of the things I've always loved about you as a person working for you, even if I got ribbed every day for being not being conservative enough.
Daily cause.
Right. Was that it was about what you just said, talking to people, about having conversations, about understanding that. At the end of the day, most people who have the opportunity to learn realize when their smoke's being blown up their ass. I mean, and could talk a little about that. I mean, your kind of philosophy on people you might not agree with.
Well, I mean, if I only had friends who are, you know, like-minded politically, I wouldn't have any friends. And it is very clear to me, and I think it's true mostly in most people's lives, that it doesn't. I have my opinion. I was always lucky, even at WBBM, I didn't have to hide my views, but I didn't wear a Trump T-shirt. I didn't wear, you know, I'm respectful of everybody's beliefs, and I can think people are wrong and stupid without thinking they're Nazis or criminals.
Right.
The problem today is that anybody that has an opinion that's more like John and me is a Nazi, a war criminal.
We have to be denounced. We have to be shamed, like the Tribune shamed me.
Right. And people might not believe that. Here's an example of it. I have a friend I work in Andersonville who owns a small business, and they, you know, are always looking for coverage, always looking to get their product out there. And it's a product that features, you know, they work for its dietary restrictions, and that's what they kind of focus on. So right. She got a call to say, hey, you know, Fox 32 in Chicago here wants to have you on for the morning show to bring some goodies and talk about your business. It's woman-owned, all that stuff. And she had five people quit because she was going to be on Fox 32
Guess
in
what?
Chicago.
She deserves it. She should man up and go on Fox.
She did. Oh, she certainly did. She didn't
kick them all out.
Yeah, and they all but that was these people like, well, I'm going to give up my livelihood and my paycheck because, you know, because Fox is in the title, and it was just asinine to me. But that's how they feel. That's where they live in that world where it's not us, it's you.
And like I say, I mean, I grew up in New York City. You're exposed to everything. I was very fortunate. The most fortunate thing for me was that my parents instilled critical thinking in me.
Yeah.
I've been a Republican since I was 10. My dad was a Democrat. He was in AFTRA. He was a shop steward. And he finally came over once when his 18-year-old son registered to vote as a Republican. Mm-hmm. And it's like, those are your values. Be that. You know, be that. Especially out here, if I went, I'm only talking to those, you know, to people who think like me, it'd be crazy. I can honestly say that our best family friend is anti-Trump, is all the things that people would be shocked at. And yet we just never talk about politics because he has his and I have mine. And it's okay because we both love Mexican food. You know? And
right.
So,
we're more alike than we are different.
But it also requires that guys like us, even you, Jeff, you know, draw the line and go, you've got to stand up for your opinions.
Right.
You've got to say what's on your mind. We can never improve if, you know, unless guys like Steve Hilton run a good campaign for governor, you know, unless Spencer Pratt somehow out of nowhere becomes somebody who can be.
Right.
Because I do believe that people will see the light at some point. People will go, geez, we're paying too much in tax. I mean, I want to say, you know, we haven't gone there really yet. Gavin Newsom cannot be the president. He will not be the president.
Wait a second, mister. Gavin Newsom is handsome. He's articulate. And he's behind Buttigieg. Right? Isn't he?
I actually saw a poll that Buttigieg was. Imagine that, a goof who did a bad job as mayor.
South Bend, yeah.
Somehow is going to be the president. He's a pet rock. By the way, just like Stephen A. Smith is a pet rock. Every time I hear the Democrats go somebody like that off the beaten path, especially. You know, especially people who don't have any experience at all. I think of Michael Avenatti. Remember, he was. For a minute, he was going to be. He's the antidote to Trump. There's a million clips of the geniuses on CNN going Avenatti. Well, he's in. I think he is just out.
Yeah.
He went to jail, and so the Democrats love to do that. But Newsom cannot run on his record here. He cannot lie about his record. We have the highest taxes, the highest gas prices. We have literally one third of all the homeless people in the United States live in California. Our kids cannot read They are all at around 25% of their elementary school grade level. We have an infrastructure problem. The fires that have been caused not only were bad at being remediated, not only bad at being fought, but they should never have happened because their forest management is more interested in the snail darter than it is about actually preventing fires. So he can never be the governor. He will not be the governor.
President.
Well, that's Hilton.
I mean, I'm sorry, president. The president. Yeah. And sure. And by the way, he hasn't been a good governor.
Yeah.
He has not. He plays to the wokes. And John, you said he's articulate. I think he's only articulate if you listen to what he's saying as if it were some kind of a song. If you actually listen to what he has to say, He has nothing to say. Nothing. He will never answer a question straight up. Boys are still playing in girls' sports in the state of California.
But people don't want to confront that. They don't want to confront it. It makes them uncomfortable. They don't want to think about boys playing girls' sports. They don't want to think about the snail darter leading to the fires. They don't want to deal with it. Why not?
That's really the point of all of this, that at some juncture, people are going to go, Jesus, why did we do that? Why do we do? I think back, and I think my wife and I talk about this pretty often, that if 50 years from now, people are going to go, really? They let a boy with a penis run track against girls in the high jump and all those things? Really?
And box a girl and break her face?
They burned down Fairfax, this thriving top, you know, shelves street because of George Floyd? What? They defunded the police? They cut back on the number of cops? We will be a petri dish for bad decisions.
But here, the one thing that you're talking about in terms of your website, Los Angeles, California website, is that people have nowhere to go. So if they want something other than the claptrap from the left, they have nowhere to go. In the Los Angeles Times, for example, all this nonsense thrown at them daily, they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, even TV, you know, here, you know, I think a lot of places, a lot of the surveys I've seen show that people, they actually believe their local news. And I think it tries, it doesn't realize how woke it is. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, but, the way people, and this is really should be taught in schools. I'm not in favor of having a media course taught. They tried to push that in California because I know how it will be taught here.
Right.
They teach a media course. But, for, you know, when people people think about it, when you hear a story and they go, and the story is Trump claims so-and-so, that is biased. Right. The word says is non-biased. Right. Trump says versus claims. Claims implies that he's saying it may not be true. Actual reporting is he says that is 100% true, right, and accurate. Yeah. And people don't think, they think it's just, you know, it's just reporting how bad he is and how great the Democrats are. It is much more nuanced than that. And I'm not even saying it's a conspiracy. I just think that's what the people who are on TV have been taught in school. And they choose those words because they know darn well that it implies something that they want to invoke. that there are better ways to communicate things if you truly want to be down the middle. Right. And you know, if the takeaway from the podcast is when they say claims, it probably means they're trying to get you to not believe it.
Absolutely. And that's, and you, John and I have talked about this, and this has always been my contention, is that, you know, I don't blame them, you know, the media people who have come up in it, because we're now, you know, two generations removed from the PC, you know, eruption of the 80s. And I feel like they don't know. They just don't know what they're doing. They think, well, I'm fighting the good fight. I'm, you know, this is bad. This is what I've been taught. And I wish, and I know you're right, you're absolutely right, that if there was a media course, that would be, it would just be an indoctrination course. But yes, the schools are already doing that. You know, we're already in that vein. I feel like if we had something to show people, especially as consumers too, I mean, there's so much going on in the world where people are trying to take advantage of the low intelligence, you know, crowd, that I wish we could, you know, I really wish in a perfect world, in my utopia, it would be taught that way. We'd be taught the idea of reading through the lines. And John, I did this last week. We went through the headlines, and you could easily see the differences in the papers and what just their headlines are telling you that are, you know, bending the truth. Would you ever do that? Would you ever teach true, do you think?
No. Oh, no. No. Okay. I'm with Rush Limbaugh. skulls full of mush. Thank you. No, not interested. But I do believe that part of NLACA and part of, you know, the Chicago Way podcast and, you know, our buddy Prof is not just a way to get the message out or make a buck, that it's a mission to re-kilter the way people digest information, so that there's an alternative, so that they have a place to go when they go ask the question, gee, that doesn't sound right. You know, asking questions, that's one of the things that we are really focused on LACA. When I was at BBM, maybe this has now got to be, you know, 20 years ago, but the city decided they were going to go after cars who interfere with bicyclists. And for instance, if you open your door and you hit someone in a bike lane, there's a, you know, $1,000 fine or something. And I'm in the newsroom at BBM and I go, anybody here ever see a bike stop at a red light? No. Anybody ever see them stop at a stop sign? No. I go, so I assign one of the reporters, I go to the city and let's find out how many citations have been issued to bicyclists for breaking traffic laws as a sidebar to screwing down the driver for not giving enough right of way to the law breaking bicyclists. It took 3 months, and I'll never forget the quote, few if any. And I directed the reporter to say none. I go, if they're going to quibble and tell everyone it was few if any, I think they won't.
There was a little rat at the Reader. His name was John Greenfeld, and he was doing columns about the bikes, the little bike people, and they were getting very upset. Like, if you did not kowtow to them, they would attack you personally. I don't understand.
Absolutely. The bike people are, you know, they're crazy. Here, they're
socialists.
And they have spent untold millions of dollars doing what they call road diets. They're bound and determined to get people off the roads in California. So they take away a lane from a car and give it to a bicycle to create more traffic so that people will get pissed off and take the mass transit that, by the way, A, doesn't go where you need to go. B, if you can figure out how to go where you need to go, it takes twice as long. And C, if you don't get killed on the rapid transit, They try to force people out of their cars. And by the way, most of the time, it's too hot. No one is riding their bicycle to work in LA. It's very spread out, and it's mostly hot, and no one is going to work stinking of sweat.
Right, and then compound that in Chicago, where half of the year it's snowing, and you wouldn't be
correct
alive anyway. Yeah,
well, I remember actually when it must have been right at the end. I want to say, John, it might have been when you were on the radio with Jake, where they remember
they hated the little bike people.
Right. But they moved but for the winter, they moved the bike lanes like into the middle of the street and people were getting hit. I mean, it's this is social engineering that defies logic.
That should be that. That's
I got to move something someplace safe, like Portland.
Oh, my God. The worst. You know, I love food. I watch a lot of food videos on YouTube.
Me too.
And people love the food in Portland. There is zero chance I would go to that town even to eat the great food. It's a mess. But, you know, but this is what happens when you allow your, you know, Ben Shapiro, you know, is, feelings, don't care about facts. It's true that, and again, I always now liken it to Trump derangement syndrome. It doesn't matter what's true. It just matters what I feel. And that's not accurate. Our laws are based on being able to prove things on facts. Just because you don't like it doesn't, you know, Mamdani is Netanyahu's a war criminal. Well, that's your opinion. That isn't a fact. Forget about whether or not you have the jurisdiction to screw up international relations. Forget about that. That's your opinion. I think you're a criminal. Do I just get to go and arrest you? That's where we are now. Where it doesn't matter what's true. It just matters what you feel.
You know what? That's when journalism became a feminist process. And that's where we lost it.
Yeah. Yes.
Because you have to feel. You have to have feelings. And that's what we lost. Well, Drew.
There's no question. And we need to fight to get it back.
Drew Hayes, will you come back again?
100%. I'd be happy to come back. I love you guys. And, you know, I've been a longtime subscriber. And I so value what you're doing. And I value your friendship, John. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my friend. And And thanks for that column that you wrote. It was great. Brilliant.
Good stuff.
Excellent. Thank you, you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, okay. Drew.
For Drew Hayes, my former boss and Jeff's former boss at WLS Radio, who now runs his own website on LACA. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, future physics teacher, friend of cats, baker of pies. And me, I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense for less than a dollar a week. Don't you want common sense with all this chaos out there? Join us again next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.